December 6, 2012, Nectar Devotion in Mayapur, Class 6. Okay, we're looking at now at the other four characteristics of bhakti. So far we've looked at kleshagni. Somebody please tell me about kleshagni. Kleshagni means, what's a klesha?
Suffering.
And agni is? Burns up. Okay, and why does bhakti burn up all of our suffering?
Because it removes the ignorance, identity.
Okay, removes the ignorance and identity. So it removes all levels of suffering. Yeah. Oh, somebody put that up for me. Thank you, whoever did that. Who did that? So it removes everything. It removes the avidya, the kutam, the bijam, the papam, the aparabdha karma, and the parabdha karma. Everything. Oh, what a relief. And then you feel shubhada. You feel
happiness.
What does shubhada mean? Auspicious. You feel happiness, and you feel a happiness that's a different quality than material enjoyment, material renunciation, the bhakti, and even mystic powers. It's a different quality. Who's here ever had a piece of fruit right off a tree? Tree ripened fruit. Or a vegetable right out of the backyard, right? It's a different quality, isn't it? It's a whole different taste. Can you hear the difference between a person talking without a microphone and with a microphone? Different quality. So this quality of this happiness is different. Now maybe in sadhana bhakti it's not so big yet, but the quality is different. And it's attractive to everyone, it helps everyone, and it brings real good qualities. Okay, so that means that's what's auspicious. Now once you get to bhava, bhava means your material contamination is pretty much done. Pretty much done. You're actually, and bhava, you're... We'll talk about what bhava is later, but you're experiencing your spiritual body. You're starting to develop your relationship with Krishna. So at that time, moksha means liberation. Vaikuntha-krit, you have a happiness that is beyond even liberation. So in sadhana bhakti, you have a happiness that's of a spiritual quality. You have a different kind of happiness. By the way, to some extent, these things can be experienced even on day one. It's not a zero or a hundred thing here. Even on day one, you can be in a kirtan and experience a happiness that's beyond that of music. You can be eating prasadam and experience a happiness that's different from food. You can be reading the book and experience a happiness that's different from philosophy and intellectual stimulation. It has a different quality, correct? Haven't we all, right? You're doing some service, and it's a happiness that's different from just interesting work. There's some different quality to it, and that can happen, you know, on day one. And some feeling of freedom from distress can also happen to some degree at any time in sadhana bhakti. But in bhava, the happiness is so great that even the happiness of liberation is just insignificant. So who can even imagine? Because the happiness of liberation is incredible compared to material happiness. If you took all your material happiness and you put all the material happiness and the whole material world together, it would be nothing compared to the happiness of liberation. And one drop of the happiness of liberation is nothing. I mean, the whole ocean of material of liberation is nothing compared to one drop of the happiness of bhava. So who can imagine? I'm going to go through this, then I'll do questions. Who can imagine how big it is? Just because I'm concerned that I want to make sure I do everything. Now, but this is sudurlabha. Su means very, or it can mean good. Durlabha means rare, unusual. It's unusual for people to come to the bhava stage of bhakti. And there's two reasons for that. One is that Krishna has to give it, and he doesn't give it unless he trusts you. He doesn't give it unless he trusts you. So just like when you get married, when people marry, a husband and wife have some control over each other. By the way, it's not just that a husband has some control over the wife. The wife has some control over the husband also, unless it's a very weird relationship. But in a marriage, husband and wife have some control over the other. Therefore, you try, at least you do your best, to marry someone that you trust, right? If you let somebody into your life and you let them be your intimate friend, sometimes we have a close friend and we may say, okay, you know, they ask for something and you'll say, this is confidential. And there's a part of you that goes, I wonder if it's really going to stay confidential. I'm sure we each have a few people in our life that we trust, maybe one only. Maybe just two or three. You probably don't have 10 or 20 people that we totally trust, do you? Why? Well, we've had experience. Correct? Of trusting people and, you know, if you let somebody have some control over you, love means that you let go. When you love, when you allow someone to love you and you to love them, you take down the walls. Right? So Krishna only will give bhava to somebody that he can trust. You know, a lot of times we worry about how can I trust Krishna, but Krishna is also mostly worrying about how can he trust us. You know, if you had a husband who ran around with other women and he had 500 other women and you threw him out of the house and then he came back one day and said, I'm so sorry, I want to come back. Are you just going to let him in your house? I don't think so. I mean, you might be happy that he came back. Maybe not, but anyway. You might be happy that he came back and say, I'm glad you've come back. But you're probably going to make him sit outside, aren't you? And you're going to have some tests, aren't you? I'm so sorry, I won't do it again. Okay, well, let's see. We're going to be watching. And every once in a while, you might open the door and talk to him out on the steps. But you're not going to let him into your house for quite a while. Bhava Krishna is letting us into his house. He's letting us back into his house. We've done the same thing. We've left Krishna. We've been having an affair with Maya in many, many, many different forms. And then we come and say, Krishna, I want to come back. And at first, he's very happy. When you first make a decision to surrender to Krishna, you usually get some strong reciprocation from Krishna. Because he gets very excited. And then he says, okay, let's see if I can trust you. And if we keep periodically going and flirting with Maya again, you know, it may take a while. Yeah, I want to surrender to you. But okay, I'll be back, Krishna.
Hi, Maya.
Here I am. See, I'm here. So it's rare because he knows that once he lets you into his house, once he lets you, Krishna always loves us completely, absolutely. And he wants us to come back more than we want to come back. But he has to trust us. So I have one devotee friend of mine whose son is a heroin addict. And she can't let him come into her house. What do you think he does in her house? He steals her money. She loves him. Does she want him to come into the house? Yes. Clean. She wants him to come into the house. Clean. She wants him to come home more than he wants to come home. But she's not going to just, she loves him. But she's not going to just let him come in. So bhava is only awarded when Krishna sees that he can trust us. And the Bhagavad Gita says one has to pass the test of the spiritual master. We are being tested by Krishna and Guru and the sadhus. Prabhupada also talks about if you want to be a street sweeper, you don't have to pass a big test. But if you want to be a government, big government employee, there's a test. To get into a university, there's a test. There's some sort of an exam. If you just want to sweep the corridor, you know, who cares? So if we want to enter into Krishna's abode, into Krishna's lila, we have to show that we're trustworthy. Now, the nice thing, of course, is that for every step we take towards Krishna, he takes 10 steps towards us, that he helps us. And that according to 10th Canto, Chapter 2, the prayers of the demigods, we don't even have to get into the boat, we just have to walk towards it. And as soon as we go towards the boat, as soon as we approach the boat, the whole ocean of our material attachments becomes very tiny, and then we just walk over. And I'm sure, again, we've all experienced that with many of our attachments. I'm sure in coming to Krishna consciousness, I mean, sometimes I talk to very new people, maybe some of you are in that category, who talk about what are they going to do about their non-devotee friends. What am I going to do? If I become a devotee, what will happen to my relationship with my non-devotee friends? And when I hear that kind of question inside, I don't say it, but inside I think, that is so ridiculous. What a ridiculous worry. But I remember when there was a time for me when that wasn't a ridiculous worry. There was a time for me when that was a very big question and a big block and a big doubt and a big fear. It was a big thing for me. What will I do about my non-devotee friends? And now it's nothing. It doesn't mean anything to me. Or there was, you know, when I was first wanting to move in the ashram, I thought, what will I do with all my music? What will I do with all my music? And it's not even a question for me anymore. It's gone. At the time, it was like a big ocean of an attachment. It was like the Pacific Ocean, and now it's not even there. So have we all had some experience like this? That you had some big attachment and some big doubt and some big thing, and maybe you've even forgotten about it now because it disappeared. You don't even remember anymore. And only when you meet somebody who's still going through it and they say, oh, I have it, you're like, oh yeah, I used to have that. So that's the nice thing, although Krishna's very hesitant, at the same time, when he sees our sincerity, he will help us. He will help us. And what seems impossible becomes immediately possible. But it is the point that this isn't something cheap. It's not something cheap. It's not like Krishna's saying to all the criminals, oh, you want to be good again? Come on in. He's saying, okay, fine. Enroll in our reform program and pass the test. And it's also rare because it's not attainable just by the external Shilanam stuff. You can't just do the body and speech stuff, folks. Can't do it. Won't get you there. You ever have someone say they're sorry just with their mouth? Little kids do that all the time. You hit your brother over the head with the fire truck, go in the corner.
They don't want to be in the corner. Say you're sorry. Sorry.
I mean, how many people have apologized to us that way, you know? I've had people apologize to me that way. Well, I'm really sorry that I hurt you, but, you know, I'm a victim too. Okay? So when we come to Krishna and we're saying, my dear Lord, from this day on, I'm yours. From this day on, I surrender to you. It's got to be real, okay? It's got to be also thoughts and feelings. It can't just be body. Just the rituals will not make it. Eventually, if you do everything on the bodily platform, it may affect your thoughts and feelings and it may become real. So better to do externals than nothing. But it's not just like, that's just not. You go on like that for a long time. It's got to be something from the heart. Because really, what is this bhakti all about? What is this process all about? It's about Chaito Darpana Marjanam. Marjanam is the mirror. I look in the mirror and I go, oh my God, I offended you, Krishna. Just think about somebody, hopefully some of you have never had this, but Has everyone here had someone in their life who's like really offended you, like deeply, really violated your trust? And really disappointed you, like deeply? You gave them a whole bunch of stuff out of your heart, and you sacrificed, and you loved, and you gave, and you gave, and you loved, and you sacrificed, and you trusted, and they turned around and stabbed you in the back. Well, folks, that's called us. And it's hard to see that. It's hard to look in the mirror and say, whoa, you know, I'm dealing with the most wonderful, beautiful, perfect, loving, giving person who has absolutely zero fault, and for no good reason at all, I went and stabbed him in the back and tried to be his competitor and was envious of him and have offended him. And I'm really sorry. And therefore, Prabhupada says, the perfection of Krishna consciousness is crying.
Yeah, but he's big and we're small. And we can never be what he is. Okay, tell me, how, you know, why did he make it like that? Why can't we just...
Because love is free. No, well, without freedom, love is so great. We have such capacity to love, and love is so wonderful. We also have such capacity to unlove. So that's what's required to enter into bhava. And that's why it's rare. Because that degree of humility and that degree of attachment to Krishna, that degree of real love for Krishna, a real hankering for Krishna, is not something that most people are willing to do very quickly or easily. It can be done in a moment. We read that in the quotes, that if we fully surrender to Krishna in a moment, he will fully reciprocate with us in a moment. So if we're not getting full reciprocation, we have to conclude that we are not fully surrendering. We may think we're fully surrendering. I hope I don't offend anybody here. And some of you may never come back because I once offended somebody really grievously by saying this. We may think we're fully surrendering, and maybe we're fully surrendering right now to the extent of our knowledge and realization. But full surrender means really deeply, deeply, deeply seeing what we've done and who we are. And that's not, I'll then take questions in just a few minutes. I'm almost finished. That's not just bitter. It's not just bitter. Let's switch it now and let's think of someone in this world that we've offended. I said to think of someone who's offended us. Let's think of someone that we may be offended, someone we care about, and maybe we did something that hurt them. Has everyone done that too? All right, and maybe you really wanted to restore your relationship with them, and you went to them from the heart, and you really tried to feel their pain and know it from their perspective and not make any excuses. Have you ever done that? The real deal. And you're there again with your friend, and you're probably crying. And you're saying, I'm so sorry. And they say, it's okay. Has that ever happened? That's sweet, isn't it? Because you're getting your relationship back. You have the sweetness of getting your relationship back mixed with the bitterness of seeing your own fault clearly. And they have to go together. Because if I'm the offender, in order to get my relationship back, I have to be actually seeing my fault. It's something that it sounds like it's going to be very hard, but when you do it, it's so sweet. So our bhakti has to be done like that, with real attachment to Krishna, with a real desire to please Krishna, with really caring about him and how he feels, not just about how I feel. And acting in such a way that Krishna will trust me. Therefore, Sudrulabha. That's at bhava. Okay, now on to prema. Now, our happiness just keeps getting better, 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 better. So in sadhana bhakti, it's subhada, it's auspicious, because we have this different quality of happiness. Krishna is so cool that even when we're still rascals, and we haven't even really become humble, I mean, we've become humble in the ISKCON way of, oh, I'm so fallen, Prabhu. But we haven't actually, you know, and I'm really not good at anything. That kind of thing. But, you know, we haven't really done the real deal yet. Even then, even the beginner, I mean, I remember I was in Germany at a festival and one guest came to the temple And after a few days, he said, I'm going to try chanting. He took some beads, went out in the on the property, and he came back and he said, this should be a controlled substance. You all know what that means? Like a government-regulated intoxicant? So he got some happiness from chanting, even though he'd only had some association with Krishna consciousness for like, you know, 3-4 days. So that happiness can happen in the very beginning. Ooh, this is different. Ooh, this is, I very distinctly remember. Ooh, what is this? I never had anything like this before. This is different happiness. This is the tree ripened fruit. It's not the supermarket fruit. Huh? And then at Bhava, it's such a great happiness that the whole ocean of liberation doesn't compare to one speck of it. But now at Prema, Sandra Anna, Sandra means very concentrated, like Burfi. The essence. Visheshatma, but it's expanding and expanding and expanding and expanding. Bhaktisiddhanta said, although we're very limited jivas, we have the capacity for unlimited happiness. So Sandra Ananda Visheshatma means the happiness of the soul is just, it doesn't have any limit. It's just going on in variety. There's variety of happiness in quality, in quantity. That is one of the qualities of prema. And the other is now Krishna is fully attracted. So at bhava, it's rare because he knows as soon as he gives you bhava, he's going to start to get attracted. He's going to really start to trust you. And at prema, he's gone. The pure devotee holds Krishna in the palm of his hand. Whatever the devotee wants, Krishna gives. Kalpa Vriksha trees. Chintamani dust. Whatever the devotee... Why? Because the devotee never wants anything evil. At that point, you're fully trustworthy. You have all, you've got all good qualities. Whatever you want is auspicious for you and for everyone. Whatever you want is loving. You're fully trustworthy, and therefore Krishna will give you everything. He's fully under your control. And he likes that. Krishna enjoys being under the control of his devotee. But the devotee doesn't abuse Krishna. You know. Okay. So again, these are the characteristics of bhakti. This is how you know you're on the path of uttam bhakti. How do you know you're performing uttam bhakti? You should be getting relief from distress. That doesn't mean you don't break your arm. It doesn't mean that there's some like magic dust on your life and everybody's nice to you and you never get sick. And you have billions and billions of whatever money you have, euros or pounds or furans or dollars or whatever it is, rupees, millions of rupees maybe isn't worth that much. But doesn't mean, you know, that the externals of your life are all fairy dust, but it means that less and less and less you're affected by the material distress. You're not so affected by it. People insult you, you're not so affected. You lose something, you're not so affected. You have some bodily pain, you're not so affected. And that you start feeling that your life is becoming auspicious. You're starting to experience a different kind of happiness. You're seeing that the ceiling of your good qualities is getting higher and higher and higher. And you feel benefited and attracted. And at the higher stages, happiness beyond liberation. Something that's rare because Krishna is trusting you. You're getting an attraction to Krishna. You're feeling actually some deep connection with Krishna. And then finally, unlimited happiness. And Krishna is then attracted. Okay, that concludes our chapter one. Anything else I really wanted to talk about? No. Okay, so now we're going to go on to these questions. Very nice questions. Some of these will be applicable to later. Okay, in the purport it says, without guru initiation, connection with Krishna is not possible. Even without a guru, I can feel that Krishna is connecting with me in many different ways. How can this be explained? We will discuss this more in chapter 7. And I'll just say that it's the comparisons, I'll just say right now briefly, the comparisons Prabhupada gives are usually enrollment in a school. So some of you are enrolled and some of you are just listeners. So those who are just listeners, there's some connection, but you're not getting the full benefits of the Mayapur Institute. You're getting some, but not full. You're not going to get the diploma. Is that clear? Or if you go to a college, you know, when before you're enrolled, you can't check out books in the library. You can't just go to any professor and get help. Once you're enrolled, you get your little ID card. And then all the professors in the university will help you. I mean, at least in theory. And, you know, you can check out books. You have all the facilities of the university are open to you. And without that, you're not really connected with the university. That doesn't mean there's no connection, but it's not digital, it's analog. It's not zero or 100. It's not that if you're not initiated, everybody has a connection with Krishna, come on. But initiation is a contract. So you want Krishna to have a contract with you, you've got to have a contract with him. Another example would be marriage. So before you marry somebody, generally there's some relationship. Even in an arranged marriage, they don't usually have the wedding 2 minutes after the agreement. There's some time period that passes between there's an agreement you're going to marry someone and their wedding, right? Yes? I mean, they say it takes 6 weeks if you send out invitations to assume that people can come. I mean, maybe some people have the wedding 1 day later or something, but there's some time. I mean, even if it's 5 minutes, there's some time. Will you marry me? Okay, now let's go get married. So there's some period of time where there's a relationship, even though it's, but it can be broken. I mean, of course, now marriage can be broken too, but the idea is when you say, yes, I will marry you, but until you've married them, you're not married. And I have seen engagements broken on the wedding day. I was at a wedding where the engagement was broken on the wedding day. So until the contract signed, it's not signed. That doesn't mean there's no relationship, but it's not firmly established. I mean, we'll talk about that later. Okay, I talked about this already, but I'll talk about this again. This is deep, this is hard, this one. If you don't get it right away, it's okay. At first we serve Krishna and are grateful he's meeting our needs. Isn't it that at more point we attain Brahman realization and we don't have any personal needs anymore, but simply serve Krishna devotees out of love with our individual offerings? You always have needs. When you're fully realized, they're fully met. Now, if your needs are fully and 100% met, you may say, I don't have any needs anymore. Are you all feeling that you need air? Is anybody here feeling, I need air? Why? Because we have it. My guess is that generally through the day, you're not thinking, I need air, unless you have asthma. Correct? Am I correct? Has your need for air gone away? No. It's being satisfied. And because it's being satisfied, it's not in your consciousness. And you're not being motivated by your need for air. You're not thinking, I better go to this place because I can get some air over there. Does that make sense to you? Once we've realized we're a soul and we're connected with Krishna, our needs are all satisfied and we basically forget about them. It's not that you forget about them because you don't have them anymore. It's not that you stop being an individual. You forget about them because they're automatically taken care of in Krishna's service and you focus on the service. The idea that what a teacher should do, what a school should do, is set up the classroom so you can focus on the class. If you're here in the class thinking, how am I going to breathe? Does that happen sometimes? Have you ever been in a class where you had to worry about breathing? I have.
Yeah.
I've been in a class where I can't breathe. I'm just thinking, I've got to get some air. Or it's way too hot. or it's way too cold and I can't listen to the teacher because I'm like, my God, no faith, lead. Oh my God, so cold. Right? Correct? I was in a temple for many, many years, but during the summer it was so hot. And the leader of the temple didn't believe in fans. They were like against his religion or something. He didn't like fans. And at one point, myself and another devotee paid for an air conditioning system. And the temple leader didn't even want it. And we said, really, Prabhu? He said, okay, okay, okay. And then it was really funny. He made an announcement at the Sunday feast. We've gotten a donation of an air conditioner. Everybody was cheering and throwing flowers in the air. And then he came to us later. And he said, I guess you were right. So the business of a school is to set up things so that you can concentrate on your studies. The room should be clean, there should be enough light, there should be enough air, there should be water, there should be a toilet nearby. If it's going to be an 8-hour class, there needs to be food, right? If you work for a company, if it's a good company, they should set things up so that you don't have to worry about things. They give you a desk and a phone and whatever you need. They may give you a car. They may give you a computer. They give you a salary so you don't need to worry about whether you're going to eat when you get home. They may even give you a birthday party. They give you vacations. They give you what you need for your work, and they give you what you need for your own peace. Correct? Yes? So Krishna's not better than that? So if you work for Krishna, he gives you whatever you need. And if you have a good employer or a good school, you forget about what you focus on what you're doing. You can focus on the work and you're not worried about, am I going to get paid? And what's going to happen, you know, if I get sick? Am I going to have what I need to do my work? You can actually forget about it. You just don't think about it anymore. I mean, it's the same can happen in a marriage with a good husband, or if you're a child with good parents, or if you're under a good government. Maybe nobody has that anymore, but, you know, if you have a good government, again, you shouldn't have to worry. You don't have to think about it. So that's, well, Krishna's the best government, and the best father, and the best mother, and the best husband, and the best teacher, and the best employer. And the reason that the great devotees stop thinking about themselves is that they're automatically connected. It's gone. They're full. They're full. Yes?
How can you have unmotivated love if you have needs? There's no question of freedom if you have needs all the time. That's
but they're automatically fulfilled.
But if you need Krishna to fulfill them, then how can you really love him? Because it's always a need. There's always
that's a really good question. So Thomas Merton, the Catholic monk who wrote an appreciation of Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, he said, all of us have a God-shaped vacuum in our heart. By the way, are you all doing okay with my speed? Are you doing okay? Everybody doing okay with my speed and my vocabulary? Or is anybody suffering? Are you suffering? You okay? You okay? I'm going pretty fast. Is anybody like dying here with my English? Please, be honest. I can slow down. You okay? Everybody, promise me? Don't just try to make me feel good. Yes? Yes? Everybody? Okay. So we have a God-shaped vacuum in our heart. When I'm separated from Krishna, I have an illusion of unfulfilled needs. It's an illusion. It's not real. And the example is given of a hand that's cut off from the body. I can't be cut off from Krishna. It's impossible. But because I'm turning away from Krishna, I don't experience I don't want to experience the connection. I'm like a little child that says, I want to run away from home. I was saying to my grandson, you know, you need to not just think about yourself. You need to think about other people. People are taking care of you. You should think also about taking care of them. He said, well, I'm hoping pretty soon, you know, I can get a job and enough money so I can just take care of myself. I said, nobody can just take care of themselves. We're all dependent on others. I said, that's not the solution. So that's our mood. I'm just going to take care of myself. Forget about this Krishna. And then as soon as I do that, I feel incomplete. All of a sudden, I feel, wait a minute, I need. And all my material relationships are, I'm relating with you, and this is really a sad thing to say, I'm relating with everyone and everything to take. I'm empty. Okay, what can I suck from this? What can I suck from this? Now, if I'm a little civilized, I know I can't just steal. I can't just rape and steal. I can't just take from you without your permission. That's raping and stealing, right? I'm taking something from you that you're not willing to give. I'm taking it from you by force. That's called vikarma, by the way. So if I'm a little civilized, I know I can't do vikarma. I might want to, but I know that it won't work out very well. I'll steal and rape a little bit, and then I'll get caught and spend the rest of my life in jail, and I won't get anything. So I'm trained by my parents and my society. If you want to take from others long term, you have to give something too. I don't want to give anything, but okay. That's called karma. Karma is sacrifice. I pay for things. I want something from you, I negotiate. I pay. But I want to give a little less than I get. I don't go to the shopkeeper and say, I'm really concerned about you. Can I pay more for this item than the price? I never say that. I'm really happy if I pay less. Right? Wow, I got a 100-rupee thing for only 5 rupees. I never think, poor shopkeeper. And my human dealings in general are like that. My dealings with things also. My dealings with matter and my dealings with other jivas are, okay, I'll bargain. I'll sacrifice. I'll pay. But I want to get the better end of the deal. At least it's got to be equal. I'll tolerate it being equal. And if I start seeing it going in your favor, I'll fight. And of course, the other jivas we're dealing with are all thinking exactly the same way. Which doesn't work very well. They're trying to get a little more than me, and I'm trying to get a little more than them. And this is all coming because I feel empty. Prabhupada said in Krishna book that for the materialists, see, the world is very aggressive. So we see that we're fighting over limited resources, and I'm constantly, when all of my decisions are, how can I fulfill my needs, how can I fulfill my needs, how can I fulfill my needs, how can I fulfill my needs? So we're thinking that, well, if Krishna's fulfilling my needs, then I'm going to have a motivated relationship with him too. I'm going to him to fulfill my needs. Okay, maybe in the beginning. In the beginning, I'm convinced, oh, Krishna's the reservoir of pleasure. Why am I just getting a little cup from here and a little cup from there? After all, how much pleasure can each of you give me? You don't have much. I don't have much. You know, it's like how much money, if we went around collecting money. How much? But Krishna has all the money. When people do a fundraising campaign, sometimes they try to get a little bit from a lot of people, and sometimes they think, why not just go right to the rich guy and get the whole thing from him? Of course, materially, that gives you other problems. If you get all the money from one person, then they control you, but that's another discussion. So one may think, why am I trying to get, you know, okay, I'm trying to get some love from this person and some peace from this person and some fun from this person and some this from this person and some, you know, appreciation from here and some respect from here and some this from here and some this from here. And I'm doing all this negotiation and, you know, friends and enemies and neutral and God, I can just go to Krishna. He's got everything. So we might start out like that. But in pure bhakti, I say, oh, Krishna has everything. Why don't I just love him? And then he'll naturally take care of me. I don't have to go to him for my needs. I can go to him just for love. And again, I think we have some examples of that. I did not join the Krishna consciousness movement to get my material needs taken care of. My material needs were much better taken care of, thank you very much, before I joined the Hare Krishna movement. Before I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I had my own room that was twice as big as this room. And once I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I was in a little tiny room with 12 other ladies. Before I joined the Hare Krishna movement, my parents got me anything I wanted. And once I joined the Hare Krishna movement, I wasn't given anything I wanted. So why did I do that? Because I was inspired. You know, why do we do things like go out on traveling sankirtan and sleep in cold vans? And now, of course, at some level, you're thinking this will fully satisfy me. But that's our natural place to be satisfied. To want to get all of our needs met by love, that's not exploitive. What we want to do is get our happiness from loving. I want to get my happiness from the service. I want to get my happiness from the love, not from taking. I want to get my happiness from giving. We've all sometimes experienced happiness from giving, yes? Sometimes it's happier to spend the money on a gift than on yourself. The same money, you could spend it on yourself, you spend it on a gift, or your time. The same time you could spend doing something for yourself, you spend it doing for others, and you feel more satisfied. So that's what we want. To want to be happy is natural. We are happy beings. We are meant to be happy. To say, I don't care about my happiness is a lie. Of course I want to be happy. Krishna wants me to want to be happy. Krishna doesn't want me to want to be miserable. What a ridiculous thing. Could you imagine a parent saying to their child, I want you to be miserable? I mean, how weird is that? So Krishna wants us to be happy, and he wants us to want to be happy. But he wants us to want to be happy in our right position. He wants us to be satisfied. And he wants us to want to be satisfied. But he wants us to want to be satisfied in our natural way. So if I say, I want to be satisfied by being a lover, and I want to be satisfied by being a giver, and I want to be satisfied by being a servant, Krishna, I want to find full satisfaction by surrendering everything for your satisfaction. I want to take my satisfaction in your satisfaction. I don't want to find satisfaction independent of your satisfaction. That's reality. Impersonalism is, oh no, I don't want any satisfaction of anything. I want to stop existing. That's not reality. But that's not exploitive. That's not exploitive. That's real. You know, in the beginning there may be some exploitation. We want to come to the point, at least in theory, I'm Navilasi Tasunyam, at least in theory, Krishna, I'm coming to you because at least I've accepted theoretically that the way I'm actually going to become happy and satisfied is to just totally devote myself to your happiness and satisfaction and let you worry about my happiness and satisfaction. At least in theory, Krishna, I'm telling you, I'm not going to worry about my happiness and satisfaction anymore. I'm not going to worry about my needs anymore. You can worry about them. However you want to fulfill them, that's your problem. I'm just going to worry about serving you, and I'm convinced that I'm going to get everything I want by making you happy. I'm going to concentrate on your happiness. And then Krishna says, okay, I'll concentrate on your happiness. Deal. That's what we're looking for, you know? And then we never find it on the material level. We don't find it. So anyway, that's deep stuff. If you don't get it right away, that's okay. I don't know if I've fully gotten it yet either, so you know it's okay. But I tell you what I know. Intravitrasa is experienced when we perform activities in order to get fame, adoration, etc., etc., etc. Anybody like to answer that question? Of the 12 rasas, if you're looking for fame, what rasa might that be? Might be fear. Might be...
chivalry.
Might be chivalry. I'm the hero. What else might it be?
Ghastliness?
Hmm?
Ghastliness?
It might be ghastliness if you want fame as, you know, a serial axe murderer. Some people do that, you know. Some people go and shoot up 20 people just so they become famous. So that's ghastliness. So they do. People do that. Not many, thankfully. I haven't met one yet, please, Krishna. Let me never meet one. What other rasa could it be? Could be comedy. Yeah, you want to be famous through comedy, sure. Famous as a great comedian, sure. What else could it be? So many things, right? Could be famous as a good friend. Somebody might want to be famous for, you know, having 20,000 women. There was some basketball player, I think, who bragged that he had 10,000 women. So, you know, it could be different in different rasas. Adoration also. What do you want to be adored for? What do you want to be famous for?
Any of them.
Yes. Any of them. It depends on the personality. Can Anicca-bhata engage in conjugal rasa with Krishna? This will be answered in chapter 16 and 17. Why would an impersonalist want to divide Krishna from his paraphernalia and pastimes? Because an impersonalist doesn't think that Krishna really has paraphernalia and pastimes. Impersonalists think that it's just all light. There's no personality, there's no paraphernalia, there's no pastimes. How to be fixed in Krishna consciousness and not commit any sinful activities? Being fixed in Krishna consciousness is a gradual process, generally, which is part of what we're going to be explaining as we go through Bhakti Rasamrita Sinta, how we go through that gradual process. Okay, this is another question that keeps coming up. Some devotees say that when devotees are pleased with you, that it means that Krishna is pleased with you, and similarly, if devotees are displeased with you, that means Krishna is displeased with you. Is this correct? Usually. If not, how to counteract such argument, especially if it comes from senior devotees? I gave you some examples of where it wasn't true. I gave you some specific examples from the Shastra of where Krishna could be pleased and the devotee not pleased. So there may be some, just like generally, if you're doing Anushilanam, there's going to be Anukulyena. Generally, if you're doing the activities of bhakti, Krishna will be pleased. But there might be some instance, like with Mother Yasoda leaving Krishna to take care of the milk, where Krishna was angry. Of course, that's also Krishna's pleasure, because that's Krishna experiencing a rasa of anger. So it's a kind of ecstasy. But one could say, on one level, that Krishna wasn't happy. Is that clear? Of course Krishna was happy with Mother Yasoda. But he was demonstrating anger. He was demonstrating displeasure. So generally, if you do the things Krishna says please him, he'll be pleased. But it might be some circumstances where Krishna will respond with something else. And maybe someone who doesn't intend to please Krishna accidentally pleases him. Does someone ever please you without meaning to? Somebody wrote a really insulting thing about me the other day, and I was laughing for a long time. I was experiencing the comedy wrestle. But that was not their intention. So generally, if you do the right thing with the right intention, Krishna's pleased. And if you do the wrong thing with the wrong intention, Krishna's not pleased. But there might be sometimes when that's not the case. So generally, if the devotees are pleased, Krishna's pleased. And generally, if the devotees are displeased, Krishna's displeased. Of course, it depends on the level of devotees, my dear friends. How transparent that devotee is, how much they're connected with Krishna. There's levels of devotees. But that may not always be true. There may be some circumstances. The gopis were really angry at? What devotee were the gopis really angry at? Akura. When you go to Hungary, Shivaram Maharaj takes you around the property and tells you all the holy places. And when he gets, I was there the first time he did this parikram. It was 3 days before Janmashtami. And we got to the place where Akura came to take Krishna. And it was really funny. He said, and this is Akura Ghat. And everyone goes, boo. Akura is a pure devotee of Krishna. Krishna's pleased with Akura. That's part of Krishna's desire to go to Mathura. But the gopis don't like him at all. They're not pleased with him. So if someone brings this point, you can say this is not absolutely true. It is not absolutely true that you can judge Krishna's pleasure or displeasure by the pleasure or displeasure of another devotee. First of all, if that devotee is not very advanced, they may not be accurately representing Krishna's pleasure or displeasure. And if they are very advanced, there may be some aspect of lila or rasa involved here. So this is not, you can't say this absolutely. But generally, yes. It's not that we should think, well, I don't care what the devotees think of me because I'm just pleasing Krishna. Let me go beat up all the devotees, and as long as I'm pleasing Krishna, it's okay. That's ridiculous. Okay, this I already answered. What is the difference between removing seeds of desire and changing one's nature? Okay, we have two natures. We have our eternal nature, and we have our present condition nature. And guess what? You can't change either of them. You can't change your eternal nature ever, and you can't change your condition nature in this life. It's almost impossible. Figure it's impossible. It's like if you're riding in a car, the car is not going to change into a bicycle. It's just not. It's possible to change your nature in this life, but it's so unlikely. It would take a tremendous amount of work, and you would probably fail. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. And if you try to do it, which probably all you get is another body with a different nature. There's a famous actress. What's her name? Julia Roberts, who became a Hindu. And she said, in this life, I'm up in the front. I'm very famous. In my next life, I want to be a quiet person in the back. Be careful. If you're very quiet and you think you'd like to be more outgoing, or you're outgoing and you'd like to be quieter, if you're very organized and you wish you were more random and spontaneous, if you're very random and spontaneous and you wish you could be more organized, if you're very careful and you wish that you were more risk-taking, if you're very risk-taking and you wish you were more careful, you will just get yourself another body. Forget it. Please. Take any desire like that and just dump it in the trash can. Forget it. Who cares? Doesn't matter. Whatever nature you have, you have. Deal with it. Use it for Krishna. Finished. It's got its good sides. It's got its bad sides. Who cares? Nobody has a perfect nature. How stupid. The people who are outgoing want to be quiet. The people who are quiet want to be outgoing. I mean, what? Stupid. I remember when my second child was like 1 year old, and I was talking to the head of the Sankirtan ladies. And I said, oh, I wish I could just do full-time Sankirtan. Why did I get married and have children? And she said, Urmila, all these unmarried ladies are calling me 5 times a day and saying, I wish I could be married and have a child like Urmila. And then I thought, what a stupid fool I am. So, you know, just forget it. Whatever body you have, you have. You have a woman's body, you have a woman's body. You know, oh well. Got a man's body, got a man's body. Oh well, it's short, tall, big, fat, green, purple, brown. Your nose is this shape, it's that shape, your eyes are this. Who cares? We're in this body for 8 billionths of a second of Lord Brahma. Just, you know, who cares? We got a part to play, play it for Krishna, and then, you know, done. Don't be like, I wish I could play that part for Krishna. I wish I could play that part for Krishna. I wish I could play that part. I mean, if Krishna asks you to come back and play another part for him at a service, that's fine. But don't be hankering to play this part, that part, the other part. Whatever nature we have, we have. Some parts of our nature are wonderful and we really like them, and some parts of our nature are very embarrassing. We wish we didn't have them. And everybody feels like that. Everybody. Every single person has parts of their nature that they're like, I wish somebody could see that. And parts of our nature are like, yeah. Everybody. And natures are like this. The strength is on the other side of weakness. If you're a risk taker, it's a strength if you're preaching in Saudi Arabia. It's a weakness if you're handling the temple's money. Clear? You don't want risk takers handling the temple's money. But you want risk takers preaching in Muslim countries. So if you're a risk taker, it's a strength in one situation and it's a weakness in another situation. And every material quality is like that. If you're very quiet, that's a strength in some situations, and it's a weakness in others. You know, if you just get along well with everybody, that's a strength in some situation and a weakness in others. If you're willing to get out there and have your own opinion and let people hate you for it, that's a strength in some situation and a weakness in others. If you're very truthful, that's a strength in some situation and a weakness in others. If you're very diplomatic, that's a strength in some situation and a weakness in others. And my dear friends, you cannot be both very truthful and very diplomatic. You have to be one or the other. And if you're very truthful, you might say, God, I wish I could be more diplomatic. And if you're very diplomatic, God, I wish I could be more straightforward. Just forget about it. Forget about it. Who cares? It's not our real self anyway in this life. It doesn't matter. Just like the color of my skin, the color of my eyes, the color of my hair, it's not the real me, and neither is the personality I have in this life. It's just a role that I have for this life. Now, what does that have to do with desires? Getting rid of desire, material desires means I want to be the controller and enjoyer of the material world, and I want to be the exploiter, and I want to be God. So, depending on our particular personality and nature, those desires have a particular flavor. I want to control everybody by being so sweet and so compliant and so cooperative. Everybody just wants to do whatever I say because they all love me so much. I want to control the material world by being such an aggressive boss that I force everybody to do whatever I say. Whatever. So getting rid of the material desires means I want to use my nature in service. There's something about my nature that Krishna likes, believe it or not. I can use my nature to do things that Krishna likes. You haven't studied the Gita yet, but 3rd chapter, 18th chapter, Krishna says you have to follow your nature. You cannot repress your nature. He said repression will do nothing. Your choices are use your nature for me and be happy and I'll take care of you and you'll get everything you want, or use your nature for Maya and suffer. That's your choice. If you don't like your nature, don't worry. You won't have it past this life anyway. Who cares? And if you become Krishna conscious, you realize your eternal nature, which is wonderful. Okay, but don't envy anybody else's nature and don't hate your own nature. It's just a waste of time. It's a trick of Maya. Maya is saying, this kind of material nature would be so much better for your Krishna consciousness. And you go, bam, 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 shut up. Okay? And if anyone else tells you that, just smile and say thank you. Go on with your life. Please. If someone tells you that some change in your personality or material nature will make it easier for you to be Krishna conscious, just smile at them, say thank you very much, and ignore them. Please. The only thing that will make your Krishna consciousness easier is if you use your nature properly. You see, what situations will my in what situations will the kind of person I am shine? In what situations am I just the wrong person? You know, someone may ask you to do something, you say, I'm sorry, I'm not good at that. Now, if it's an emergency, maybe you have to do it and you fail, and what can be done? But generally you say, I'm not good at that, Prabhu. I'm sorry, I'm the wrong person. Well, if you're surrendered to Krishna, you could be good at that. I'm sorry, I'm just not surrendered enough to Krishna. I'm the wrong person. Be honest. Don't try to be something that you're not. It won't work anyway. At least that's Krishna's opinion. So if somebody wants to argue with Krishna's opinion, Hare Krishna. Krishna never says anywhere, surrender means doing something that's not your nature. If someone can find me that verse, I would like to see it because I haven't seen it anywhere. Surrender means doing something you're not good at, you hate, that's not your nature, that you're not good at. What Krishna says surrender is, take your nature and use it in my service. That's what he says surrender is. Getting rid of your material desires means wanting to use my nature for my own sense gratification. Wanting to use my nature to enjoy and exploit the material world. And spiritual desires is wanting to use whatever nature I have for Krishna. Okay, so I also, if we have time, we don't have much time. This we'll talk about another time. It's a very good question. We'll talk about another time about liberation. And any other really good one that we really need. Okay, we did that. There's a question here about the role of women in Krishna consciousness, but I don't think that's relevant to what we've been talking about right now, so I'm not going to answer that right now. If it's relevant later, I'll bring it up. Why is the last one I'll just answer really quickly. Why is the John Mills story given as an example when he called only his son's name and not Krishna? Is this not an offense? No, because he was innocent. He was innocent. He was, therefore, he was not committing any offense. And the example is given that just by calling Krishna's name, even indirectly, in innocence, he was able to get free of the roots of sin. So I've heard that you guys all also have classes in the afternoon.
Yes.
Whoa, that's hard.
Yes.